Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. I'm JJ Cooper. Today, joined by Jim Callis on our we're doing a Skype call today, so getting one of our rare Jim Callis podcast appearances. Thank you for joining us, Jim.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And today we're going to talk prospects, which I know we haven't, because of a couple of technical problems, we haven't had as many prospect podcasts as we would like over the first half of the season, but we wanted to talk prospects today. Especially, we just released the midseason top 50 prospects list, and Jim and I were both involved in putting that together, so we wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a insight into the background on how we put that list together and really just kind of give you some opinions of ours on some of the prospects. So the midseason top 50, I don't know about you, Jim, but to me the midseason top 50 is significantly tougher to put together than the preseason when we do the, our top 100. What do you think?
Oh, I think definitely, and I think that's because when we do the preseason one, the target isn't moving. You know, the guys, you know, aren't even in spring training yet. We've just spent months putting together the prospect handbook, so we have, you know, a ton of scouting reports on guys, and they're fairly static. You know, the guys aren't going out. Nobody's getting hurt. Nobody's velocity is increasing or decreasing, so we know what we're dealing with. And I always feel like when the midseason list comes along, especially since I'm so heavily involved with our draft coverage, I'm glad to do it because it forces me to find out how guys are doing, not just statistically, but you know, stuff wise or tools wise. But I just feel like I just feel like I have a lot less knowledge. Or I feel a lot less comfortable with my knowledge going into this than I do the top 100.
Yeah, when we do the top 100, that's really kind of the culmination of everything that really starts. The best way I can put it is starts right now. I mean, right now I'm sending out today best tools surveys and getting ready to talk to managers in the Florida State League for that. I think you have the Midwest League. And that starts, and then it goes from that to we have our league top 20s, which adds more information and kind of helps us sort that out. And usually you'll get a name of a couple of guys who haven't even popped up right yet, who will end up being intriguing prospects that comes out of those calls. And then we go from that to our team top 10s, and for the prospect handbook, our team top 30s. So by the time we do the top 100, and we're working on that in February, it really is kind of a feeling of, okay, we've been working on this for 6 months. The midseason top 50, not that we're not following prospects, but it's one of those balances of you don't want to go too far on this guy who's having a great year, but you also want to make sure you're not being way too light on a guy who is having a great year who seemingly came out of nowhere.
On these guys, you know, we'll make a few phone calls to check in, but as you said, you know, by the time we're doing the top 100, between all the people who compile information, we may have made, you know, as many as 15 calls on a guy. So you just feel like you have a lot more information on him.
Right, and I'll give a guy an example of one guy here, Leonis Martin's on here, who's we rank number 25. Leonis Martin, right now, we're going off a whole lot less information on Leonis Martin that we will have at the end of the season. It's fair to say. I mean, right, he's only, because of an injury, he only has, I think it's something like 150 at-bats. And that's the only U.S. action he has after signing with the Rangers as a Cuban defector. Well, by the end of the season, you have a longer track record statistically. You also have had more chances for more scouts to see him. And you've also had the chance to, you know, the Rangers even have a better feel for what that guy is than they do right now. So it's one of those things where I guess what we're trying to say is that the midseason top 50, I believe, is important, but it is much more of a snapshot than, say, the postseason top 100.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more fluid.
And with that, now, at the top end of it, though, I feel like that was something where you can debate – 1 and 2 either way you want to, or you can bait 3 and 4 either way you want to. But I feel like we feel pretty confident that the top 4 prospects are most definitely the top 4 prospects in the game right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's fair. You know, with Harper, Trout, Matt Moore, and Julio Teheran, I think that's very fair.
Now, when we were doing this, talking about we'll start with the top 2. We have our rankings have Bryce Harper number 1, Mike Trout number 2. Now, I was on the Harper number 1 side, but you made kind of a pretty reasonable, a pretty convincing case for Trout as well. What were your reasons that you would say that, hey, you can make an argument for Mike Trout number one?
I just think he can be. I think he can beat you in more ways than Bryce Harper can. I think when all is said and done with those two guys, and again, it's not, you know, when you have these discussions, I know you don't look at it this way. Sometimes fans are like, oh man, Jim hates Bryce Harper, or JJ's down on Mike Trout. And I'm not saying that. I had Bryce Harper too on my list. I just think, you know, yes, Bryce Harper, you know, the power jumps out at you, but I think Mike Trout's a better hitter. I think he's going to have, you know, at least 20, maybe 25 home run power. I think he's going to provide a ton more defensive value as a quality center fielder. And I think, you know, especially with the Angels, the way the Angels run, if you told me Mike Trout wound up leading the league or the majors in stolen bases one year, that wouldn't surprise me either. I just think he's a better all-around player than Bryce Harper. That said, I think it's a coin flip when you're talking about those two guys.
Right. Trout is more, I mean, he's a center fielder, at least for now. And Harper's a corner outfielder, although you can find a scout or two who will say, hey, you know what, if they wanted to put him in center field for the next several years, I think Harper could handle it. He is a better runner, obviously. I mean, considering his size, Trout's an amazing size-speed combo because he's linebacker size, but with plus-plus, I mean, or if you want to say, you know, it's 80 speed, correct?
Yes.
And so there is that. Now, on the other hand, with Harper, it comes down to is Harper a future home run champ? Because
I think that's fair to say yes.
Yeah,
wouldn't you?
I think so too. The closest guy, I mean, really, if you wanted to make a comp for Harper, the closest guy I can come up to as a comp is think Mike Stanton with maybe even more power, which is hard to believe. But yeah, what do you think of? I mean, as far as what they're going to produce, that to me, Stanton was mashing homers from the minute he hit low A. In Harper's case, Harper's was mashing homers in JUCO, setting records with a wood bat, and then is hit the ground very much running in low A. Now he's already up to double A. But it's kind of the all around guy versus with Harper. It really seems to come down to if you believe that he's going to hit for average in addition to power. That's the argument for him, number one. If you think he's going to be more of a slugger with a solid but not a great average on base percentage, then the argument would be Trout, number one, it would seem like to me.
Yeah, and that's where I guess I'm coming from. I see – and again, I mean, he's so young, and I almost hate putting guesses on Harper because the guy's so talented, almost seems like a limit. Like, to me, it seems silly like, for minor leaguer, the most I guess I'd feel comfortable saying is, okay, that guy's a future 40 home run hitter. But if you were to tell me Bryce Harper's going to hit 40, more than 40 home runs in a season, I wouldn't disagree with you. I just think the guy's ridiculous. But I do think, at least more of the guys I've talked to, see him as a guy who's, you know, obviously going to hit for big power, you know, he's going to strike out, you know, a fair amount and not be that high average hitter. You know, maybe more of a 275 hitter, where I think Mike Trout's going to be a guy, especially when you factor in his speed along with his hitting ability. You know, Mike Trout might be a guy who's a future batting champion. So I guess in my mind, you know, at least compared to the rest of the staff, because I think I'm always the guy who advocates for Trout, I probably think there's a bigger difference in what those guys are going to hit. You know, I think Trout will hit, you know, significantly more than Harper will. And that I think the power gap is probably closer. Not that Mike Trout's going to be hitting 40 or 50 home runs or anything, but I do think Trout's going to be a 20, 25 home run guy. And so that's why I have Trout number one. But as we're both saying here, you know, it's
both these guys really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think if you ask 30 teams in baseball, if they had to pick between the two of those guys, and they had the second choice, I think they'd all say fine. You know,
yeah,
the second choice and be happy.
Yeah, and now I think with Trout, you said, you know, you see him as a 20 home run guy down the road. Now I can see that too, because you look at his size and his strength. The thing with him is that he does not have – I had a question in the chat when we did after the top 50 on Friday, and the guy said – someone was asking, so can you see Trout hitting 20 home runs in the big leagues over the second half of the season? And it's like, well, okay, cool down a little bit here. Mike Trout doesn't have really that much present power. I mean, he has 20 home runs in his professional career right now over a season and a half.
Right. I mean, he did hit 9 this year and half a season. I mean, I think he would hit 20 – this year. But yeah, he's not going to come out and go Mike Stanton on anybody here in the second half. He's not that kind of guy.
But now and then, once we did 1-2, I think it was also, as we said, it was pretty clear that 3-4, we knew that it was going to be Matt Moore and Julio Teheran in one way or another, whether Moore was 3 or Teheran was 4. In the preseason, we had Teheran ahead of Matt Moore, but now we flip that. And it's worth noting, we did flip that before the Futures game, which it seems like at the Futures game, there was a whole lot of scouts and a whole lot of people looking at this and going, wow, that Matt Moore guy is really good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think one thing that factors in this a little bit, and it does for me with Trout versus Harper too, is where guys have proven themselves. You know, Trout's played well in Double A, Harper's played well in Low A, just got promoted. And I think coming into the year, we had, you know, Teheran had proven himself in Double A, Matt Moore had proven himself in High A. But, you know, that said, you know, even though Tehran's gotten a cup of coffee this year, and you're not going to base anything on just winning in the Futures game, I think it would be very hard for anybody who saw Matt Moore in that one inning in the Futures game to imagine that there's a better pitching prospect out there right now. He was 96-98. You know, we knew he had velocity. I don't think that was a surprise. The most intriguing thing to me, JJ, about the Futures game for him was he threw 3 sliders. He struck out Alex Liddy on, I think, an 87-mile-an-hour slider. And I, you know, tweeting during the game, I had a couple people tweet back at me, you know, slider. He doesn't throw a slider. He throws a curve. I mean, if you're watching the game, I mean, it clearly had a lateral break. And I don't know of anybody who throws an 87-mile-an-hour curve anyway. And so I asked my, you know, Moore after the game, you know, is that slider a new pitch? And he was almost, I don't know if sheepish is the right word, but just kind of shook his head. And he just said, you know, he said it was just more of a slurvy breaking ball. I wasn't staying on top of my curveball very well today. You know, I guess it had slider break. And, you know, I don't think it was false modesty, but if anybody, you know, has the game on tape and you go back and watch the game, I mean, yeah, maybe he wasn't trying to throw it. He was trying to throw a curveball with more downward break, but he was throwing a nasty 86, 87-mile-an-hour slider by accident, which I just think is a tribute to how quick that guy's arm is and how well he spins the ball. You know, most guys, if they're getting on the side of their curveball, are just hanging a pitch, and he's throwing an 86-mile-an-hour slider.
Well, and that was, to me, I talked to a scout, did a scout's view, actually, of a scout who'd seen both of them, and he said, to me, it's more, and there's two big reasons, one of which is that tie goes to the lefty.
Sure.
If you got a left-hander and a right-hander, and you think that they're both completely equal, well, you're going to take the lefty every time because it's harder to find a lefty, especially it's really hard to find a lefty who can run it up to 98 miles an hour. But beyond that, the other thing he said was is that if you look at the breaking balls, Matt Moore's breaking ball is significantly better right now than Julio Teheran's. And now that doesn't mean Tehran's a very young pitcher. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a chance to develop a better breaking ball. But it's pretty inconsistent right now. And the scout said his worry was is that Teheran may hit the big leagues really before he has a chance to fully refine that pitch. Whereas with Matt Moore, he sees a 3-pitch mix right now. And I've, you know, had someone before say to me, you know, if you look at Moore and compare him, this does not mean that he's better than all the lefties in the big leagues, but if you look at his stuff, you'd be really hard-pressed to find 2-3 lefties in the big leagues who have better stuff than him.
Well, I think that's very fair. And again, I'm not saying he's better than this guy right now, but just, you know, you look at the Rays themselves, you know, they've got an all-star lefty in David Price, who's certainly been very successful. And I don't think there's any question that Matt Moore's pure stuff is better than David Price's. Well, we should, you know, we're talking about a guy who used to, you know, was a former number one overall draft pick. And, yeah, he, you know, now I think the question is with Moore, you know, the Rays, and it's worked very well for them, have had a lot of success developing young arms by moving them very slowly. But, you know, I wonder, I mean, A, I think the guy's ready for some AAA action. But B, you know, it's kind of like the Jeremy Hellickson situation from a year ago of, you know, hey, where do we, you know, and it probably won't be this year, but, you know, where do we find room for this guy in the rotation? I mean, Jeff Niemann, you know, might be the odd man out because, again, it's not just the one inning in the Futures game, but, you know, if Matt Moore continues to develop in the second half of this season like he has in the last year and a half, how is that guy not in their big league rotation to start next year? I don't see how you could keep him out of it.
Well, one thing with that is I went back and did a little research on looking at the Rays, the current Rays starting rotation, and how long they spent in Double A. And obviously, and the Rays are very patient with their pitchers. David Price is almost – they were patient with David Price, but that was a different kind of path than everyone else because he was such a considered such a big league ready pitcher when he came out. They still were slow with him, but he did move up to AAA pretty quickly. But everyone else had at least 17 AA starts, and several of the pitchers had 17 to 20 AA starts before they moved up. Well, Matt Moore's hit that point. He's at 17 starts. So it wouldn't stun me if they did move him up to Durham at some point before too long. And then, yeah, it is kind of – I would say it's safe to say that there's probably 15 teams out there right now that if Matt Moore was in that organization, he'd probably be in the big leagues right now because
– And here's the thing too, JJ. I mean, the Rays obviously are a good team, but right now they're 5 games out of a playoff spot. It's – I almost wonder at some point you just have to say, look, we got to get the guy in the big leagues and have him help us this year.
Well, but the other question is it's a big debate coming up. Okay, they're 5 games out of the playoff spot. You said you threw out Jeff Niemann might be the odd man out. Well, I'll tell you this. If they wanted to, you know, if they said, hey, James Shields is available, there would be a lot of teams lining up. That he would probably move really to the front of the line as far as available starting pitching, wouldn't he?
Oh, I think no question. I mean, I think that comes down too. I mean, do you want to trade James Shields? Are you going to be able to re-sign James Shields? I mean, at some point they've got to sign some of their guys long term. But yeah, I mean, it gives you some options.
They have Evan Longoria.
Right. But you know, they signed him like within a week of him being in the big leagues.
Right.
But I'm just saying. I mean, I almost think maybe you hold on to Shields and Price. You know, it would be interesting. You know, the problem is if you trade James Shields, then I think it's almost self-defeating because. If you're trading James Shields, I don't think you're going to get necessarily a lot of big league ready talent for him. You know, if you're making the best deal possible, there's going to be prospects in there too. So who knows? That would be an interesting question for the Rays. But I just, again, if you know, you could wind up missing the playoffs by 2 or 3 games when you have a lefty who, as you just said, you know, has as good a stuff as any lefty in the big leagues. You know, who's willing. You know, maybe it's not. You know, whether it's as a starter, whether it's as a reliever, I just think that guy could help you now.
And speaking of which, it made me think of another guy who does appear in this list. In the offseason, the Rays, because they have so much pitching, they traded away Matt Garza. And I don't think they've really missed Matt Garza that much because, again, they had Jeremy Hellickson ready to step in. But in the Garza trade, the big pieces they got were it was thought to be in this order, Chris Archer and Hak-Ju Lee. Well, in our midseason top 50, Hak-Ju Lee's right there at number 22, and Chris Archer's not in the top 50. So do you think that's kind of flipped a little bit as far as who's the most important prospect they picked up in that trade?
Yeah, I do. I mean, and then that's the nature of prospects. You know, these guys, you know, it's not like a straight line development path, obviously. And Hak-Ju Lee has, you know, been better defensively. I think his speed has played up a little bit more. Hak-Ju Lee was just so young, too. I mean, last year was his first year in full season ball, and I just think he's looked like a more polished player. And yeah, you know, if you go down the list on our top 50, I mean, you have Machado, you have Profar, you have Hak-Ju Lee, then you have Gene Segura, who's not necessarily. Oh, Segura did make our list. I think we have 3 shortstops.
D. Gordon also.
That's right, because D. Gordon came back to from the majors to the minors when we're doing the list. But there's 4 shortstops on the list. There are not, and I did an Ask BA in this earlier in the year. There are very few legitimate shortstop prospects in terms of guys you know are going to stay at shortstop. I mean, shoot, in this year's draft, there was 1 first-round pick who we knew was going to stay at shortstop, and that was Francisco Lindor. Those guys are hard to find. And so I think with Hak-Ju Lee just getting more polished and more developed, even if Chris Archer hadn't struggled with his command, I think you almost could argue that Hak-Ju Lee would have passed him anyway just because shortstops are so hard to find.
And you make that point with that. If you had even, say, extended this down to, say, 75, you mentioned Gene Segura would have definitely been in there.
And he's not a lock to stay at short either.
But he's not a lock to stay at short. Grant Green would work in there somewhere in the 50 to 100 list, but he's not a lock to stay at short.
He won't. I don't think he has really any chance.
I don't think – yeah, there's a lot of – Nick Franklin would probably be in there. He's not a lock to stay at short.
Yeah, and he's probably a second baseman pretty much. So.
I don't think at this point, because of the struggles he's had this year, Christian Colon would be in there, but he was in there at the start of the season. He's probably a second baseman long.
Right.
So you're right. There's just not – I had several scouts repeat to me as I kind of ran our list by them. They said, look, to me, if I've got a good catcher or a good shortstop, I'm bumping them up because if I've got a guy those positions who I really like and think can stick there, that has an added value just because it's so difficult to find those guys. I mean, look, you can debate whether the Pirates – it's a great first half or if they're actually in the pennant, you know, in the race in the Central. But right now they're in it, and they don't have a catcher right now because of injuries. But the reality of it is that if you look around baseball, there are several teams right now who do not really have a catcher in the big league level that they are in any way comfortable with going out there every night with. And that's, again, a catcher to me is another position where, and if you look, I think there are more catchers out there right now than there are shortstops. But if you look at our list, Jesus Montero's number 8, but I think we both agree, you understandably put C by his name right now, but that's not a long-term. He's not a long-term catcher.
Would be if he were a catcher, I think you'd be arguing that he's number 1 on this list almost, but he's not. You know, he's not going to stick there.
And then going beyond that, Devin Mesoraco's number 15, which to me, Mesoraco would be an intriguing prospect even if he wasn't a catcher. But the fact that he's a catcher makes him really intriguing because you're talking about a guy who now has a year-and-a-half track record of hitting, and to go with it, he's – The scouting reports are that he's a solid catcher, not maybe, you know, gold glove defensively or anything, but he's definitely should be able to stick back there. And again, that makes him extremely valuable in a league that always needs more catchers.
Oh, I definitely agree. And I was impressed talking to him at the Futures game. I mean, he's, you know, there's another guy. I mean, you have a team that's on the verge of, you know, of making the playoffs. You know, they wouldn't make it if the season ended today. I mean, really, it seems like the best thing, you know, the Reds kind of kill two birds with one stone would be if you could trade Ramon Hernandez and get, you know, yeah, you're not going to get a superstar for him, but, you know, get something useful for him and put Mesoraco in the lineup and bolster some other area of the team.
Well, I mean, and I don't think that these are two teams that make sense a whole lot for trades, but what would Ramon Hernandez look like for the Pirates or the Giants?
I mean, that... Yeah, I mean he'd be very, very useful. You know, it's I don't know what you'd necessarily get back from the Pirates, and I don't know if the Reds would want to help the Pirates and vice versa.
Right, that's the thing.
But with the Giants, if you could get, you know, some, you know, maybe you throw something else in and get, you know, and you can never have enough pitching. You know, that might make a trade that would make a lot of sense for both clubs.
But the other catchers on the list, so we got Mesoraco's at 15, and then you go down Willem Rosario's 28, Travis d'Arnaud's 29. And that's it. That's the extent of catchers on the list. I think with Rosario, I we were talking about with Mesoraco, he'd be an intriguing prospect if he wasn't a catcher. I think it's safe to say Rosario's 28 on this list. If Rosario wasn't a catcher, he wouldn't be on this list.
No, you're right. I mean, and if he wasn't a catcher, I mean, I don't even know where you'd play him on the diamond because he's 5'11", 200, and he doesn't run well. So, I mean, you'd have, I guess, the world's shortest first baseman. Yeah, I mean, he's not tearing it up, you know, with huge numbers this year. I do give him a little slack. I mean, he had a knee injury last year. You know, he is hitting for power. You know, and I think he's going to be, you know, as you point out, I mean, you put him in the context of a catcher. I think he's going to be a guy who is, you know, maybe just an average hitter with, you know, good power for a catcher. You know, he might be like a 250, 260 guy with, you know, 17 to 20 homers and very good defensive skills. And, you know, as you alluded to, there's a lot of teams who would love that, you know, behind the plate.
So, now, I do want to ask throw out a wild card question to you. So, which prospect or a couple of prospects on this list do you think, when we come around to the postseason top 100, when we're, you know, putting together the top 100, or even next year at this time when we're doing the top 50 again, who are some guys who really have the potential to even climb higher than they are on this list? Who are some guys who have some helium, to go use an old Josh Boyd phrase?
I guess the guy who maybe jumps out the most, or maybe not the most, but the first guy who jumped to mind for that was Taijuan Walker. I just think he's very young, and he's got a lot to learn about pitching, but the arm is so good. You know, I don't think there's necessarily a big difference between Taijuan Walker's arm and Carlos Martinez's arm. You know, I'd rather have Martinez, and I think our rankings reflect that. But I think Taijuan Walker's a guy who, if he keeps doing what he's doing and keeps getting better, that he's going to, you know, especially if we're talking midseason next year, you know, a lot of these guys ahead of him are going to get promoted. Taijuan Walker might be on the short list of the very best pitching prospects in baseball.
The guy who jumps out to me, you mentioned Martinez, which I think as we get to know more and more about Martinez, he may climb even a little higher. He's 18 on the list right now, but stuff-wise, he compares pretty favorably about anybody. But we got Jurickson Profar number 12 on this list. And that's really high, and that's really aggressive for a guy who's in his first full pro season right now, or, you know, first full season pro season. But I wouldn't be shocked at all for him to be a top five prospect before too long, just from the standpoint of a young shortstop who can stick at the position, who has the tools for the position, and is showing really a very advanced approach as a hitter, for considering his age and also considering his relative inexperience as a hitter. He's a guy I've been blown away with more and more as the season's gone along, and nothing in the Futures game or anything else has dissuaded me from that. What do you think?
No, he was very impressive in the Futures game. I guess I was more looking towards guys at the bottom of the list, but no, you're right. I mean, the guy's very young and very gifted, and he's another one of those rare, legitimate shortstop prospects.
There's a guy, the number 50 guy on this list, Paul Goldschmidt, is one of the ones who's made kind of he makes life interesting, I guess is a good way to put it. But I know in the calls when I was talking to scouts, he was one of those divisive players who scouts have a whole lot of different opinions on. What did you get as far as a feeling on – Goldschmidt led the minors in home runs last year, tied with Mike Moustakas. He's battling for the home run lead again this year. Last year he did in the Cal League. This year he's doing it in AA in the Southern League, which is a significantly lessened hitting environment compared to what he had last year. But there's still a lot of doubts out there about him. What do you think about Goldschmidt?
Well, I just think he's a guy who's going to have to keep doing what he's doing because of his profile. He's a right-handed hitting first baseman. I'm not saying everybody's putting up numbers like Goldschmidt, but those guys, it's not hard to find a right-handed hitting first baseman. And to make it in the big leagues as a righty first baseman, you've really, really got to hit. And he's done that, but I think he's going to be the type of guy who, because he's an all-bat guy, he's going to have to keep doing it as he goes up. You know, this year, you know, as you point out, I mean, he's in less of a hitter's league. He's controlling the strike zone a lot more. I think he's already walked more than he did last year. It is more impressive. But you know what? When this guy goes to AAA, he's going to have to do it again. I keep hitting on this theme. You know, you talk about the Diamondbacks. I mean, they're right there. I think if the season ended today, they're three games out of first and maybe five out of the wild card. And they're not getting much out of first base at all. So you begin to wonder, are they going to call Paul Goldschmidt up at some point this year? I mean, your options are, you know, Juan Miranda's not getting the job done. Xavier Nady's not getting the job done. You know, Russell Branyan, that didn't work very well. You know, it almost seems like, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, you know, let's get this guy, maybe if you don't want to promote him to the big leagues right now, let's get him in AAA and see what he does over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And he might be able to help you over the last 6 weeks of this season.
Well, with Goldschmidt, the one thing that there's very little debate among, his power is legitimate. I mean, he has excellent power. That's not the question. The question is okay, is he a little stiff? Will he continue to hit for average as he moves up and all that? Will he strike out too much? But when you mentioned the first baseman that the Diamondbacks have, he has better power. I wouldn't say he has better power than Branyan, because when it comes to raw power, Russ Branyan was up there with about anybody, but as far as the power, he possibly could give them a boost. And really, the Diamondbacks, to me, we did not this year we looked at doing the organizations that really helped themselves, the organizations that maybe dipped over the first half of the season, but we ran out of room to do that. But to me, the Diamondbacks jump out as an organization that really has had a great first half of the season. If you look at not just Goldschmidt, but you look at Tyler Skaggs, you look at really several of the guys that they've picked up in recent deals.
David Holmberg.
David Holmberg's had a very good year. Command for David Holmberg is exceptional for a low-A pitcher. But they've got a number of guys who you look at and say, okay, this guy's a better prospect than he was at the start of the season. I think Skaggs, who moved up to number 19 on this list, is most definitely one of those guys to single out. But Diamondbacks have had a really good year. Any other teams jump out to you that you say, hey, that there's a really good first half for them?
I think, you know, the Cardinals have had, you know, a number of guys who've had good first halves, you know, and Miller and Martinez have been everything that people, you know, hoped they would be, you know, if not more. You know, I think they jump out at me. You know, who else do you see in that regard? You know, I think the Rangers
in the offseason, we ranked the Rangers kind of middle of the pack, and the reason we did that, the argument for doing that was, look at how many of their top prospects are either getting ready to go into full season ball or are just, you know, have just made it through low A. There were not a lot of upper level prospects, and really the most significant upper level prospect they had, Martin Perez, had a poor year in AA last year. Well, Martin Perez has bounced back and had a better year this year, and his stuff looks just as good as it ever has. Jurickson Profar has gone from being a very intriguing prospect to one of the best prospects in the game. They've signed Leonis Martin, who we have ranked number 25, so, I mean, he's one of the best prospects in the game. Now, this list does not include the two Latin guys they just signed for mega money, but those guys will fit into their top 10, obviously. And go beyond that, they also, that Myrtle Beach pitching staff they had at the start of the season, which a lot of those guys now have left Myrtle Beach, but you look at what Robbie Erlen's done. This is a Robbie Erlen followed up a great year last year with a great year this year, is in Double A now. You look at Neil Ramirez, who kind of had been an okay prospect for them, former first rounder who kind of never really put it all together. Well, he put it together this year. He's jumped up to Triple A. You look at Joe Wieland, who was kind of pitching right there with Robbie Erlen last year, really kind of thought of as a command guy. Well, he's got his command is exceptional. His control especially is exceptional for a young pitcher. But stuff he's showing is decent stuff as well. He's also made it to Double A. They just have, to me, a large number of intriguing pitchers now, and that doesn't include – there's still several guys in Myrtle Beach who are still in Myrtle Beach who are pretty intriguing. You add in the international talent that they've added, and I think that they're at the end of the season, they're going to be making a decent argument to be in that discussion for the number one organization in our organization talent rankings.
Yeah, I think they will definitely be up near the top. You know, with the international guys, I always think it's easy to get a little overexcited about them. And I think that's why we, you know, as you said, on some of the more, you know, guys they already had here, we held back on. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if Mazara and Guzman, who are the two Dominicans they just signed for $8.5 million, necessarily make their top 10. Even, you know, Mazara, the guy who they gave $4.95 million to, there was, you know, there were some questions on him. The other guy may almost be more of a better prospect.
And, right.
No, you know, even if we did count those guys, I would have a hard time putting them on this top 50 list. I don't think you would necessarily say.
And I don't think either of them would be. I don't think either of them would be in our top 50 right now. And I think you're right. I think that they could be, you know, they may end up being the number 8 and number 10 prospects in the organization, or the number 9 and number 11 or something like that. But to me, when you have a top 5, let's just say right now, okay, Martin Perez, Jurickson Profar, Leonis Martin, 1, 2, 3. And then you look at the depth that they have, because you work in some Erlen, Robbie Erlen, Joe Wieland, guys like that, Neil Ramirez, Tanner Shepard still qualifies, although he, you know, if he can stay healthy and all that. I just think it's a very deep organization now that they're not. Yeah, I think one of the signs of strength of that organization is that the two new $8.5 million they signed, you know, international signings, Guzman and all, they're not going to be top 5 prospects for them.
Right, and, definitely.
And putting them is, there's a lot of organizations where they would be, because you've got to rank people in the top 5, and especially in Guzman's case, a guy who was considered, if not the best, one of the two best hitting prospects in the international market, on the international market this year. There's a lot of organizations where he would be a top 5 prospect.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Now on the other end, when we're looking at, there weren't a whole lot of organizations that I would say have had really awful years. I think you could make the argument. I mean, the Royals farm system is not what it was at the start of the season, but there are some caveats to that. If you promote Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Aaron Crow, Danny Duffy, and Lewis Coleman, Tim Collins, pretty much their entire bullpen are almost entirely rookies and second year guys. If you do that, yes, that's going to be a pretty significant talent drop as it is. Then you throw in the injuries. They've had an injury to John Lamb, who's out for the year with having Tommy John surgery. Will Myers is maybe slightly less intriguing as a prospect than he was at this time last year when he was still playing catcher. Mike Montgomery has not had a good year in AAA, although he's been a little bit better lately. Chris Dwyer's had a really bad year in AA. So what do you think, you know, as far as the Royals, is it a significant step back, or is it kind of more what you would expect considering the guys going to the big leagues?
Yeah, I think it's more what you'd expect. I mean, when you're number one, you, just like you touched on with the Rangers, when you're number one, one of the factors we're going to have that's working in your favor is that you're going to have guys who are close to the big leagues. And, you know, then so you're going to lose guys. You know, I do think they went out and they got a Bubba Starling in the draft, and I assume they'll sign him. So I still think there's a lot of talent.
Hernandez and international signings, too.
Yeah, you know, I still think they have a good deal of talent. It's just, you know, some of it's moved on to the big league, some of it's taken, you know, maybe hasn't been as good this year as you'd hope, or, you know, in case of Myers switched positions. But, you know, that just is what it is. And, you know, I still think it's a very good organization, and I still think it'll be a top 10 system probably when all is said and done. Although it is so hard to figure out where teams are going to rank outside, unless they're like at the very top or the very bottom, because these things are so fluid. And, you know, I think we cannot emphasize this enough when we're talking about these type of guys. When we rank organizations, it's a snap. You know, we keep using this expression. It's a snapshot in time, and that's exactly what it is. It doesn't necessarily even reflect how good or how bad an organization is at developing and acquiring talent. You know, there have been times where an organization has had a couple guys who've just stayed rookie eligible and it boosts their ranking, or an organization has a couple guys who go just over the rookie limit, so we don't count them as prospects anymore, and so their ranking suffers. Or you make a big trade, and you know, you either acquire a lot of talent or you give up a lot of talent, you know, and you change the dynamic of your big league club. But you know, the Royals, I think, are still, you know, I still think they're on course, JJ, to contend in 2013. And you know, their farm system won't be ranked as high as this offseason. And you know, some of the stuff you'd done, you know, some of the research you'd done indicated this might have been the most talented farm system in the last 20 years coming into this year.
Well, the guy who jumps out to me is Chris Dwyer is not as good a prospect as he was at the start of the season, because at the start of the season, Dwyer had a very solid year last year. I think there was at least some consensus that he looked like he could be a power lefty starter. The command problems he's had this year, there's at least more of a thought out there that he's going to be a power lefty reliever instead, which would a significant hit on his status if that ends up being true. I'm a lot less concerned about Mike Montgomery. To me, Mike Montgomery's season this year reminds me an awful lot of what if we'd been talking about Martin Perez at this time last year. Perez had a pretty bad first half of the season in Double A last year, and at the same time, he was the youngest player in Double A at that time last year. Mike Montgomery's one of the youngest players in Triple A this year. I think there has been more of an adjustment than maybe he would have expected, but from all reports, the stuff is still as good as the stuff was, and the same thing with Martin Perez. The stuff was as good as the stuff was before. So to me, with that, with a guy with that who's that young, I expect this to be more of a correction than anything else. The other thing the Royals have done, we have had, is Jake Odorizzi has taken the step forward. It's not even an unexpected step forward. I think it's more like he took the step forward that we expected him to take, but he's a lot better prospect now pitching in Double A than he was when he was pitching very well in the Midwest League last year, because he's done it against more advanced hitters. So he takes a step up. But I do think, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that right now the Royals would probably not be our number one farm system, which is a pretty significant change from the start of the season. I think the Rays would definitely still be up there, which the Rays are usually up there. But the Rays would be up there. I think the Rangers are probably in that discussion. And again, yeah, it is a snapshot, though. What we're talking about right now may change pretty dramatically over the next 2-3 weeks, because we don't know what prospects may be dealt or what prospects may be acquired in deadline deals, which will be fascinating to see, obviously.
No, exactly, exactly.
So just looking as we kind of wrap this up, I did want to ask you about a guy who's in a system that you do. Matt Caesar was number 48 on this list, and I think I felt like
we're getting some ambient noise with my golden retriever's barking in the background.
Oh, sorry.
Here,
so. Yeah. Well, Matt Caesar was number 48 on this list, which I feel like, you know, we started with him out of it, and then we kind of looked at it and it's like, you know what? No, I think we probably need to move him. We said we probably need to move him into this list. But what do you see about Matt Caesar? And, you know, I got some questions in the chat. I'll pose them to you because you do our Cubs list, who said, look at this guy, you know, considering his age, he's doing the Midwest League. Well, you know, big deal. Explain to the skeptics, I guess, why we would have Matt Caesar at number 48 on this list.
Well, I think what stands out to me the most about him, JJ, is that, and obviously he's a former football player, had a lot of success at Villanova, and could have been an NFL draft pick this year had he decided to enter the NFL draft. That said, you know, a lot of times when you have these guys come into baseball, they're athletes first and baseball players second, where, you know, you can see the great physical tools, but they don't really know how to apply them. And that's, you know, Caesar is the exact opposite of that. He's got these tremendous, you know, his best pure tool is his speed. You know, and he's still, you know, I mean, he's stolen 17 bases in the first half. I think he's still learning, you know, how to be, you know, a real dynamic base stealer, but that potential's there. You know, he's only been caught five times. He's not one of these guys who's just, you know, going on pure speed and getting picked off or getting thrown out. The speed's really playing up in the outfield as well, you know, in center. I know when the Cubs scouted him last spring, you know, like a lot of football players, because he's, you know, bulked up a little bit for football, he had probably a 30 arm. And now I think the arm's closer to a 50. I mean, he's done a lot of long toss and work on his arm to get a better arm. But the thing that jumps out about him the most is this guy can really, really hit. He had 347 in his pro debut last year. He came in this year to Midwest League, you know, after playing football in the fall. He didn't go to instructional league. You know, came into the Midwest League, which is one of the toughest places to hit in the minors, and he's hit, you know, 315. He's shown gap power, and I just think you're talking about a guy who can hit for, you know, very high average, steal a lot of bases, play quality center field. And there's some pop in there, too. I could see this guy being a 15 home run guy when all is said and done.
Yeah, he's a very intriguing prospect. And I also recently promoted, so if I remember correctly. So we'll be seeing him doing his higher level competition, I believe, in the second half of the season. But, well, Jim, thank you for joining us on this top 50 prospects talk. Do want to remind our listeners, if you enjoy talk like this, we also have now the Baseball America show every Sunday night, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Make your adjustments, so 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific, on the on XM Sirius Radio, on the MLB Radio Network. I believe that's XM 89, I believe Sirius 209. So if you enjoy listening to Prospect Talk and you want more of it, you can listen to that every Sunday, and you can also call in. We take calls, so if you have a prospect question you want to ask, feel free to call in on Sunday nights as well. So for Jim Callis, I'm JJ Cooper. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for the download, and we'll talk to you next week.